to the planet.
I'm your co-host, Scott Patton, along with the founder of the Life Enthusiast Co-op, Martin Patella. Hey, Martin, how are you doing today?
Full of it, Scott. Full of it.
You're full of it, are you? Well, we're going to talk about how to make that full of it move smoothly through the system.
Yeah.
But before we do, I have to say that I just finished doing one of my hot yoga sessions.
Yes.
And it was wonderful. The elimination and the detoxing that was going on, and I don't think I mentioned this to you before, but I have two hot yoga towels, and when I get home from hot yoga, I take those two particular towels and my other stuff, and I wash them, and I've gotten in the habit of leaving them in the washing room until I'm ready to do my next hot yoga session, in which case I put them into my bag and I take them. And I do not use those towels for anything else. Any guess why?
They could be smelly.
They are incredibly stinky. Now, I'm not so bad that someone at the hot yoga who's working out was going to notice in that environment. But if you were to come over, have a shower, and use one of these towels, you know, you're putting it against your face and everything else, you'd be going like, ugh, because they have a very distinct odor, and it doesn't seem there's anything. Well, and in particular, I don't want to use, you know, bleach and all the rest of it.
Well, it's time you discovered oxybleach.
Oxybleach?
Yes, sir. Yeah, oxygen bleaching. You know, you don't have to use chlorine. You can use oxygen.
Oh, okay, good. Well, maybe I'll try that.
There are some really cool things. Like one of them is known as DD7, but oxybleach is out there. It's essentially ozone. It releases ozone into the water, right? And ozone is very aggressive, and it will oxygenate away all of the contaminants, so it will be as fresh as new.
Cool. Well, I don't get it, you know, because I go into the hot yoga place, it's hot, right? I lay down my mat, I lay down my towel, I perspire a little bit,
yeah.
And then after a while I've got these stinky towels, and I don't understand, because, you know, it's just my nice salty sweat that's going on there. It's not like it's going into anything else. So I don't get where these distasteful odors come from.
Well, I mean, you are eliminating, how would I put it, the sweat that comes out of your pores is very close to your urine in its structure.
Oh. Okay. So you're telling me it's not just water and salt?
Well, it's mostly that, but there are, of course, all of the metabolites that your body's trying to get rid of.
Oh, so, you mean like toxins?
Toxins, definitely.
So as I'm doing the hot yoga and I'm sweating, I'm getting rid of stuff that my body doesn't want to have in it,
yeah,
as well.
Absolutely.
And I can tell that I'm getting rid of a lot of it because my towels are basically garbage.
Yes. Well, okay, so you could try and bleach them back to health.
Well, I'm thinking the opposite. I'm thinking this is really doing me a lot of good, doing all this hot stuff.
Oh, absolutely it is, yes. I mean, there are five, I think, if I could count on my fingers, elimination pathways through your bowels, through your urine, through your sweat, through your lungs, you exhale.
Okay.
And I don't know, I don't remember, I forgot somebody.
I was really curious after you,
I guess
you got
you
rid of the bowels and the pee, what was left.
I guess you could be spitting and crying and...
tears.
Yeah.
How about hair?
there goes, right? Your body can eliminate using the hair. In fact, that's why we bother doing hair analysis, because we can tell what is the latest that's coming out of the body.
Right. So elimination of toxins is really, really important, as well as the assimilation of our food, which by that what I mean is being able to actually use the stuff we put in our mouth.
Yes.
As opposed to it just flowing through.
Yes. This is a major point, because it doesn't really matter so much what is ingested, but what is retained.
Mm-hmm.
You know, can you actually make use of what you're putting in? And we run into this with the superfoods that we make, because micronization, the particle size is important because your body, your digestive system only extracts nutrients at the surface level. So if you visualize things as particles, we have marbles and we have tennis golf balls and we have tennis balls and we have exercise balls.
Yeah, golf ball or bowling balls.
Okay, anything in between. Those are the sizes of things in relative term. And then, so the smaller the ball, the greater the surface area of a given volume. So if you are ingesting small particles, your body is going to be able to extract more nutrients out of that because it can only extract on the surface of the ball, not from the inside of the ball.
So what you're saying is if I have a bag of marbles the size of a golf ball, I'm going to get more nutrients out of that than I would out of the golf ball.
Yes.
Assuming I could eat both of those things.
Yeah, the smaller the balls, the greater the surface area, the greater the opportunity to extract nutrients.
Okay.
So that's on the intake. But if your bowel is coated completely on the inside with uneliminated fecal matter, you know, if it's encrusted, what then? I mean, your body's having to actually drink its water and drink its nutrients through the dried up feces that are remaining in the bowel.
And it's kind of like having this force field around your bowel that prevents you from absorbing the food that goes in.
Mm-hmm. Or you're having to suck it in through the layer of manure. Not a pretty picture.
No, you paint some really, really awful pictures, Martin.
Yes. Yeah, like this.
But it motivates me to do something. I guess that's the good news.
Yeah, I'm going to quote something. There's this really cool article on Life Enthusiast website in the section on internal cleansing. And the article is titled Assimilation and Elimination. Then under elimination headline, it says, imagine not cleaning up the kitchen very often, leaving the waste that would happen. Your kitchen would become literally alive with all sorts of creepy bacteria.
True.
The same can be said about your body. The fact that poor elimination is the most cited cause of disease within the Edgar Cayce research papers, totaling over 14,000, gives you some idea how important this aspect really is. It gives you an idea of the importance of getting rid of toxins, rid of waste, and everything else that shouldn't be there from our bodies. And then they throw this list of conditions in which elimination problems play either a big or major or headlining role, right?
Mm-hmm.
Arthritis, acne, anemia, stroke, appendicitis, asthenia, asthma, atrophy, balding, bladder stricture. You know, this is balding as in poor circulation balding. There could be balding from hormonal imbalances. Bladder blepharitis, boils, brain tumors, bronchitis, bursitis, cancers, canker sores, herpes, cataracts, cirrhosis, colds. I mean, only into C's. This thing goes all the way to ulcers, vaginitis, varicose veins, vertigo, and xeroderma. Xeroderma, as in your skin is a desert.
Wow.
Not a pretty lineup, is it?
No.
Anyway, so let's talk about how to detox. I think that's more important. I mean, yes, we can make a case that elimination is important. Yes, we can make a case that we should have things running well. But how do we get rid of stuff that we don't want?
How do we do that?
Uh-huh. Okay, we do that in the correct order of things. It should be first bowel, then liver, then kidneys, then blood, and then repeat. And the reason you do it in this order is because you want to be sure that when you push on your liver, it's not going to get stuck in your bowel. And when you push on your kidneys, you want to be sure that it's not going to get stuck in the Well, I mean, when you push on the wet side of elimination, you don't want it stuck in your kidneys, and then finally you want purifier blood, because that's where it all needs to end up. Your, you know, the blood should be the picture of your health.
Yeah, and so some of the benefits of detoxing your body are both long-term and short-term, and some of the things you may notice are increased mental awareness, more energy, more comfortable digestion of foods, better absorption, an overall feeling of better health, and a reduction in chronic illness potential as you grow older.
Right.
Just want to recharge vitality, which of course is what we're all about. But I think it's really important that we, you know, tie these sort of things in, because if we're not assimilating, we're not eliminating, and we're not detoxing, then usually the result is less energy, problems with constipation, skin, you know, acne type problems, and chronic disease.
Mm-hmm. True. Very true.
We don't want.
Right. So we can either slow down aging, or even perhaps reverse some of the chronic disease that may have come about, and so on. There's a really cool page in that same section called Eating and Cleansing, written by Andrew Gutauskas and Monica O'Kane. And this is, you know, it opens up with the diet of the average North American, but they should really say the average industrial society dweller, consists of food that is overprocessed, low in fiber, and high in refined sugar. We also consume large amounts of red meats, dairy products, and wheat. According to a 1977 Journal of Medical Association, this article says that the diet results in fewer friendly bacteria in the intestinal tract. So that's number one, right? The digestive tract must have the right kind of fauna and flora, the creatures that live there. And that's probably the, I mean, we've talked about this many times, that's probably the biggest challenge, where we have the wrong balance of the creatures that live in our intestine. Mm-hmm. We all have 2 to 4 pounds of bacteria living in our gut. Contemplate that, you know, 4 pounds of bacteria. It's about the size of your forearm, right? From your elbow down. That's about the weight of it.
That's 4 pounds?
About, yeah.
Hmm.
You know, 6 steaks, right?
6 steaks, yeah.
Half of a chicken.
Yeah. Yeah, you're right.
Yeah, so anyway, that's the size of the bacteria that live inside of us. But if they're the wrong mix, then things don't work.
So they can be the wrong bacteria, and if they're the wrong bacteria, probably we're going to have candida and fungus and stuff like that in there as well.
That's right.
And that's all going to cause us problems. It's like having a garden full of dandelions when you don't want them.
Yeah, that's right. Exactly. So we're going back to beginning, you know, like in 1986, when I was quite ill, I picked up a book by Dr. Bernard Jensen. He wrote several, or published several. They all focused on attain health through bowel management, or how to be well, or bowel care, or, you know, titles of that sort. And he showed that the best thing you can do is clean out your bowel. Somewhere I read that when John Wayne died, they found 40 pounds of fecal matter in his body, that his bowel, his lower intestine, weighed 40 pounds.
I heard the same thing.
Poor schmuck. I mean, he did have this huge protruding stomach, right? So
he did.
Right. Well, it was protruding because there was no room for all of that stuff on the inside. It had to push out. Hey, so we're trying to give people some hints as to what they could do. So the number one is maintain your bowel flora. So I guess it starts with what you don't do. Right? You don't eat that over-processed, over-sweetened diet. And then you don't drink chlorinated water, because chlorine is that which will kill off the bowel flora. And then the do's would be fulvic acid, humic acid, and all the fermentation bacteria. We actually talked about the fermentation not long ago when we were introducing the Genki Foods product line.
That's right.
So I guess we'll leave it at that. We've talked about the Exula strata flora many times. That's probably the most potent, broad-spectrum restoration product that we know of to rebuild and restore healthy function in the bowel. There are essentially two approaches to bowel cleanse. One is do it sort of an avalanche style, you know, all at once, just purge. The other one would be an ongoing daily incremental state, incremental change, sort of like individual drips.
Yeah. And the other part of it, like one of the things you often say to me, Martin, and I always remember, is when you're in a hole, the first thing you need to do is stop digging it deeper.
Yes, absolutely.
And so it struck me as, you know, one of the problems we have is what we put into our body. And I was just thinking about this as you were talking a couple minutes ago, where we put all, like, it's rare that we'll sit down for a meal and eat one or two things. Like, you talk about food combining a lot, right?
Yes.
And I'm thinking, you know, the average person sits down, they'll have a chunk of meat, they'll have a rice or a potato, they'll have some vegetables, they'll have a little bit of salad, they might have a piece of fruit there. They'll have some bread, they'll have some butter, they'll have salad dressing, French fries. I mean, it just goes on and on. I mean, it's so rare that there's not like a whole pile of different foods there. And I was just thinking about, you know, 10,000 or 100,000 years ago on the plains, you know, when we were foraging for food, you know, if we came across a bush full of berries, we would eat that. You know, and it would be like 3 days later we might find some root or something that we might eat, you know.
Yes.
Or they may be gnawing on a bark, or, you know, but
yeah,
you never sat down and said, wow, like, look, there's a whole bunch of carrots and there's a bunch of rice and there's a bunch of berries and there's a cow, let's all eat, right?
The smorgasbord approach, yes.
That just never happened before. So,
well, you know, if you follow a gorilla, which is really close to us, except bigger.
Yeah.
If you follow a gorilla, they're actually fruitarians, right? They eat mostly fruits, some veggies, and hardly any proteins. Strange, right?
That is strange.
Orangutan is about our size. He's about two or three times stronger. You know how they move through trees, right?
Yeah.
I mean, single hand overhead grabs.
And effortlessly.
Effortlessly. Which of us men are able and willing to just do single overhand grab and pull and swing our entire weight for the next, 20-foot swing to the next branch? I mean, it just throws me, right? I'm ashamed that I'm not capable of such a feat, but I'm not.
But you don't spend all day doing that either. I mean,
no, I don't.
If you started as a baby and we had you on the swinging bars at the local gym, because look at some of the amazing things some of the gymnasts do. Or I was at Cirque du Soleil a couple months ago, was absolutely astounded at some of the trapeze artist type stuff, or the balancing that they were doing. We saw two guys on a bike 20 feet above the ground on a wire, and between the two guys, there were two guys on two separate bikes, and they had a bar that basically had a pad at each end so they could put it on their shoulder, and then there was a guy So this bar is between them. They're balancing on bikes, and then a guy is on the bar sitting on a chair that he's balancing on that bar, and then they went across. It was just...
Yes.
So practice and doing something over and over helps, right?
Yeah, I'm reminded that, yes, when I was 12 or 14 or some number like that, I could pull myself up to the ceiling of the gymnasium on a rope, just hands.
Yeah, and no worries.
Yep. But, yeah, okay. Anyway, so what I was hinting at is the following. That the diet that's in agreement with you is that the diet, the natural diets that our closest relatives are living on and developing on, is largely raw. It's reasonably varied, but it's not a smorgasbord. It's a series. It's a smorgasbord in a series, not smorgasbord in a parallel.
In other words, they'll eat a bunch of something, then they'll go on and eat a bunch of something else.
Yes.
Like they don't necessarily mix it.
Right. Although, you know, if it's found nearby, of course they will mix it.
Yeah.
Yes, so there we have it. So, of course, right on this article that I was referencing, you know, it's if you want to have a healthy colon, if you want to preempt the need to do essentially the cleansing that we're forced into doing because we have not done the right thing, number one, eliminate refined sugar and flour. And I would add to it and refined salt and refined oil.
Yep.
Eliminate meats that were treated with synthetic hormones or chemicals. So that's a goodbye hot dog, goodbye smoked meat, and goodbye... all beef from North America, because it's legal to use RGBH hormones in America. So I guess stop that. Stop that now. Go into your store and ask, is your meat certified non-hormone treated? No, I don't want to buy your hormone treated meat, but I'll be happy to return when there is meat that's not been treated with hormones. You know, the consumer has the power. It's fantastic. I actually saw this phenomenal event on a movie called Food Inc. that I watched, and it shows that Walmart has completely banned milk from cows that have been treated with RGBH.
Oh, good.
Yes. I mean, it's phenomenal. And so the question is, Walmart, the hallmark of wholesome... goodness.
Where you can buy any Mr. Christie's cookie you want.
Right.
For the best
price. But the milk is healthy.
Huh.
Anyway, more power to them. Hallelujah.
That's for sure.
Yeah.
The other thing that I noticed... Oh, go ahead, Martin.
No. The next one was hydrogenated fats.
You stick with the coconut oil, right?
We'll stick with the coconut oil. We will stick with olive oil and raw butter. Raw butter is fine.
Now, can you get raw butter at the grocery store in the regular dairy section?
No, it's pasteurized.
Yeah, so I think that I just wanted to make that distinction because I was thinking, oh, yeah, okay, raw butter. And then I thought, hold on a second. Raw butter is probably not going to be very easy to get.
Nope. No, find yourself a farmer and beg him to spin off a part of his produce or milk they produce and get it under the table. I don't know if that's... I mean, there have been such witch hunts, you know, on raw milk. And, I mean, the reason we have to pasteurize the milk isn't that the milk itself is inherently bad, but because we're mixing so many different sources into one big vat, and we need to just ensure it's not contaminated.
So let me ask you, let me put it this way, and let me see if I got this right. We have Farmer Joe and Farmer Sam, and they both ship milk from, let's say each of them have three cows, So each of the three cows' milk gets mixed up together. And then so you got these two trucks coming with cows, three cow milk from two different farmers. They go into this vat, they get mixed up there. And because you have six cows with six cows' milks all mixed up, they pasteurize it because there's concern that the milk might react with the milk to create something that's not good?
No, not like that. No, it's not the reaction. It's that we don't know whether Farmer Joe or Sam or Carrie or Jack failed to wash the cow's udder and we found some of cow manure on the implements that have been used to milk, or whether some cow pie fell into the milk or somehow got into it. And so we have a small batch of milk. If we have one bucket of milk that goes bad, well, we throw one bucket and we keep the other 10. But when we have this contamination land in this
massive vat,
10,000 gallons of milk that's in this truck that just picked it up on this milk run, we now have to sterilize it because we just don't know. And it's a convenience issue from the manufacturer. You know, they're able to get us inexpensive milk, but the price we pay for this inexpensiveness is that it's denatured.
Right. So there's an issue locally here, which I want to bring up since we're now talking about milk. There are farms that would like to sell fresh, unpasteurized milk, raw milk.
Yes.
They're not allowed to.
Yes.
So what they, and this is how where it gets really ridiculous, right? Like, I know that there might be some, I know the reasons why we want to pasteurize, I understand, you know, the health concerns and everything else, but I'm going and I'm just getting it from this local farmer for my own use, I'm not reselling it or anything else, and they won't let me buy it from the farmer. They won't let the farmer sell it. So what the farmer did was he sold shares in the farm. And,
yeah, he sells shares in the cow.
Shares in the cow. And then you just come by and you just get, you know, it says it's you don't pay for the milk, you just get the milk because you own part of the cow.
That's right. And the produce the cow produces. And the only thing you're renting is you're renting the labor from the farmer, but the cow is yours.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, so they tried to get around the letter of the law by squeaking around it, right? I mean, people are smart. They try to find to go around these regulations. So, of course, the system, as we have it, tries to defend against people getting around it. So there's a loophole, and after a while, the loophole is shut down, right?
Yeah.
I mean, in this case, the loophole is on the right side of the equation. We would like the loophole to actually grow so big so that this stupid hole is shut down, right?
Yes.
However, we would end up paying a much higher price for milk if we wanted to have it raw. Because there's simply an overhead of manufacturing added to it.
Right, right. And but I think if you... That's
but it should
the same
be allowed,
thing,
right?
Well, I think it should be allowed because then the market...
let the market decide.
Let the market decide. And we have this. We have carrots that are way more expensive than other carrots in the grocery store because they have this word organic in front of them.
Mm-hmm.
So this is what you're talking about. It's not unusual. It just seems to me that you have one group of people that are very... strict, stern, fixed in their ways, and then you have other people that are going, oh, well, you know.
Yes. Well, I guess in the case of the marketing board that controls dairy, they have decided to take this particular approach, which is very hostile towards the not pasteurized.
Yeah. Like all of my cousins, I think almost all but two of my cousins grew up with dairy cows, and they just went in, swish, swish, swish. They had this barrel. Just drank the milk out of the barrel.
Yes, yes.
And
do you remember drinking that?
I don't really. I kind of remember. So
it's different.
It was very good.
Yeah.
It's delicious, in fact.
Yes. Yes, yes. Well, okay, so that's one of the stories, right? It would be better to eat raw in general than cooked. But, you know, humans are the only species whose adults would be eating or drinking the milk of another species. I mean, there's something inherently really weird about it.
Yes. So one other thing that just, getting back to elimination and everything else,
yeah.
I noticed on one of the pages that you referenced that Dr. Bernard Jensen, an American naturopath, after working with more than 350,000 patients over a 50-year span, not one of them was free from some form of bowel disorder. So he concluded that all sick people have bowel problems and all sick people are tired and toxin-laden. And
yes.
So I just wanted to say that because I know we're getting a little bit towards the end of our show today, but as a very, you know, how many of you listening, and I know myself can definitely say I don't, think about how can we make sure we've got a healthy bowel and are we doing everything we can to have a healthy bowel? And if I'm feeling a little tired or I got a little bit of a cold or I don't know, I have a headache or whatever, gee, maybe if I had spent some time cleaning out my bowel, I wouldn't have that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we go back to the three-headed monster that you and I talked about at the beginning of this year, it'd be about 9 months ago now, which was either you have presence of toxins or absence of nutrients or lack of movement, lack of circulation.
Mm-hmm.
So with the colon, we now end up with presence of toxins because, and you know, like the bowel could be either distended, you know, like ballooned out, which means that it will be storing stuff in it that shouldn't be there that long, or it will have a stricture, you know, it's imagine like a rubber band around a finger, you know, it's mm-hmm. it sort of blocks smooth transit. This sort of thing will happen with the bowel, but the worst ones are called diverticula, which is sort of like a pocket on a you know, like, how do I say it? You know, like when a river flows, it can have these dead-end, cutaway swamps.
Yeah.
You know, that's what a diverticulum is. It's a dead zone where the flow is slow.
The flow is slow.
Yeah.
The rain in Spain falls mainly in the plain, and the flow is slow. You got pain in your ain.
Oh yeah, there you go. I think we should return to this in our next episode. You know, we should. I mean, we're giving all this argumentation why it is important, but we're not telling people what to do.
Right.
We just told them what not to do, which is don't eat refined food, don't eat too much meat, definitely don't eat hydrogenated fat. You know, and then what else should we not do? Oh, buy the stuff in grocery stores that
are not in the outside aisles.
Yeah, that.
Avoiding
canned, packaged, labeled, barcoded. Well, that's not a correct statement. Just sort of, there are different levels of food, what should we call it, preservation. You know, the friendliest preservation is just refrigeration. You just keep it cool so it doesn't spoil. Freezing is the next one, you know, that makes it last longer and it damages it the least. The next one after that is freeze drying. You know, the product is made dry and is able to stay very fresh and viable for a long time until you rehydrate it. So those three are quite friendly. The less friendly ones are pasteurization, where you kill off all the enzymatic action, or canning, where you kill off all of the enzymatic action as well. And then beyond that is the preservations of fat. Fat is a problem because it rancidizes. So you either have to refine the oil or you have to add things to the fat to make it stable. Hydrogenation is one of the methods. That's why your crackers don't go bad on you because they have used hydrogenated fat to make them.
Right.
The fat itself will not spoil.
Huh.
Well, anyway, so yes, I would like to break off here now so that we can return to finally talk about elimination and detoxification in our next install.
Awesome. So, Martin, if somebody wanted to talk to you about some issues they have with their health and maybe more about these particular topics, how can they get a hold of you?
Please read Life Enthusiast Co-op's got a really well-researched website with a lot of articles that have been checked for factual integrity. And not that they all agree with one another, because remember, there are two different metabolic types. So what's good for one type is not necessarily good for the other. So
right.
You will be able to find 180-degree opposing opinions. Anyway, the articles are at life-enthusiast.com. And if you get lost in that, you can call us at 1-866-543-3388. This is Life Enthusiast Co-op, restoring vitality to you and to the planet.
Thanks for joining us, everybody. See you next time. Bye-bye.